We're holding on Huf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, the second line of the wide lines. We started learning yesterday about the Mishnah had told us that a husband yashins his wife, but not the other way around. And how do we know that from the Psukim? So we were discussing yesterday of the pasuk that says that you should give his inheritance to his relative who's closest to him. And we discussed how that pasuk can be made to tell us that given that she'eroi his flesh, which means his wife, because v'hayu levasa echad, that he inherits from her. So we discussed Abaya's method, which involved basically almost like cutting apart and rearranging the pasuk. And Rava didn't like that, and instead Rava says gerdin v'sifin v'dorshin, where instead we cut apart and reassemble the words, the letters of the words within the pasuk, and that's a valid method of drasha. So the Gemara says, "V'hai tana maisi l'mehocha." Now, instead, a different Tana learns this concept that a husband yarshins his wife from a different source. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says at the end of that Pasuk, L'she'eri Yaakov, it finishes off, V'yorash Oisa, and he will yarshin her. So in context, you would say that V'yorash Oisa means that he yarshins it, meaning the Nachla, but the Gemara is darshining that it means that he yarshins her. As we learned yesterday, Malamad Shabbal Yorushas Ishtoi, from that we learn that her husband Yarshins from his wife, Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva is basically saying the same drosha as we learned yesterday, except he's not going into all the details of Gerdin and Resif and Vedoshin. He's saying that the words Viyorash Oisa means that the husband yarshins the wife, meaning Tosfos points out that, in other words, if it weren't for that, then the Pasuk said, Uy Viyorashah. As one word, that he yarshins her, v'yireishah, whatever, and instead v'yorash oisa means that he yarshins her, and it's also a miut that she in turn doesn't yarshin him. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, that's how Rabbi Akiva learns. So it's basically the same drasha as we learned before. Rabbi Shmuel, ain't it tzarech? Rabbi Shmuel says you don't need to learn it from that. He doesn't hold of the whole gerdin and stiffen v'doshin possibility. So he would say that the word she'eroi of the pasuk means, as we learned at the beginning of the perek, means the father, and then from that we learn that the father yarshins his son if the son dies while the father is alive. So rather, Rabbi Shmuel says, how do I learn then that a husband yarshins his wife? Harehu Omer, you have a pasuk again, the psukim in Parshas Matos and Parshas Maaseh rather, which deal with the issue of if a woman yarshins property from her father, like Bnos Tzlafcha did, then what happens to that property eventually to keep it from passing to another shevet? So Harehu Omer v'chobas b'nei Yisrael. The pasuk says that when a woman yarshins property from the shvatim of b'nei Yisrael, where we talked about yesterday, matos would actually mean where she herself it yarshins from two shvatim, namely that her father and mother were from different shvatim. So the pasuk continues. Then she needs to marry a man from within her shevet. Therefore, says Rabbi Shmuel, therefore, we see from that the pasuk is concerned about about that her husband, that if she marries from a different into a different shevet and her husband yarshins her, then it'll go, then the nachla will pass to a different shevet. In other words, the point is, as we're going to be learning throughout the sugya over here, is that you could look at it like this. When a woman, let's say from Shevet Reuven, marries a man from Shevet Shimon, let's say, there's two possible scenarios where the Nachla, let's say now she inherited from her father who was from Shevet Reuven. So now there's two scenarios where the Nachla could go to, it could end up going to Shevet Shimon. One is if she dies and her without children and her husband yarshins her. And another one would be that and another one would be if she has children and her children yarshin her, because both her husband and her children are from Shevet Shimon. So now Rabbi Shmuel says the fact that the pasuk phrases it that says that she has to marry a man from her father's family in order to prevent from her father's shevet, that is, in order to prevent the nachla from going to another shevet. So says Rabbi Shmuel, you see therefore from that pasuk that you see therefore from that pasuk that the Torah is concerned about that just the fact that her husband is going to yarshin her, never mind the children, that's already enough of a concern that therefore she has to marry within her shevet. So even without getting into children, now the Gemara is going to ask, how do we know? The Gemara is going to ask soon after we go through the Braisa, how we know that. Maybe in fact the Pasuk is not concerned about her husband yaushening her. Maybe in fact her husband doesn't yaushen her, and the concern is only the children. So we'll get back to that soon after we go through Rabbi Shmuel's Zerosha and all the Pasukim that he brings. So the Gemara continues. V'omer. Now you have another pasuk also in that section. The pasuk continues. Voice sisev nachla levnei Yisrael mimata elmata. That nachla, that Yerusha, should not move from among the Bnei Yisrael from one shevet to another. So again, that stresses the point that we want to have Nachlo stay within the same shevet. And again, that would be a problem if her husband is from a different shevet and then her husband yaushens her. So we see therefore again that the pasuk is stressing that point that we don't want that to happen. Again, we're going to ask later on, how do we know that also doesn't refer to the children yaushening her? After we go through this braisa and all the psukim that Rabbi Shmuel brings, then we're going to go and analyze why he needs so many psukim. And then you have another pasuk also in that connection, Parashas Maaseh, that says that Nachla should not turn from one shevet to another. So you have three times in the Psukim where it says over there this point that Nachla should not be going from one shevet to another. V'omer, then you have another pasuk at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, after all the Jewish people are settled securely in Eretz Yisrael. So the last pasuk of Sefer Yehoshua says, "Ve'elozer ben Aaron mes." Elozer ben Aaron passed away. So as we know, he took over from Aaron in the 40th year in the desert. Now, shortly after Yehoshua passed away, Elozer passed away. And they buried him on the hill of his son Pinchas. Which, as the pasuk finishes off, was in Har Ephraim, in the mountains of Ephraim. So now you have to ask, now where would Pinchas come to have land that Elazar, his father, didn't have? On the face of it, any land that he owns, he's going to yaushin from his father. Now the Gemara is going to ask later on why he could just as well buy property. But right now, Rabbi Shmuel is assuming that this property must have actually somehow belonged to this, not just that he bought it, in which case, as the Gemara is going to talk about later, it's going to return in Yovel, but rather that he owns it permanently, and therefore he could bury Elazar over there. So the question would be, how would that be so? So that implies Pinchas Isha, the Umesa of Yosha. So this teaches us that Pinchas had married a woman and she passed away and he inherited from her. So therefore it can be called Givas Pinchas Benoi, as the Gemara is going to work out later. How do we know it was exactly that scenario? So that would be another proof, says Rabbi Shmuel, that a husband yaushens from his wife. The Ravid, by the way, points out another point as well. Even if you were going to say, now, of course, the Levim and the Kohenim, Pinchas being a Kohen, didn't receive a regular Nachla in Eretz Yisrael, unlike all the other Shvatim. They only received Ore Miklat, not Ore Miklat, whatever, they have the six main Ore Miklat and the other 42 cities of the Levium, which also function as Ore Miklat. The point is, though, Pinchas is from Bnei Kahos, because all the Kohenim, of course, are from Kahos. They're from Aaron, who is the son of Amram, the son of Kahos, and the Psukim describe in Sefer Yehoshua that the family of Kahos received their cities in the territories of Yehuda and Shimon and Binyamin rather than Ephraim. So how would Pinchas from the family of Kohath come to own land in the territory of Shevet Ephraim? And therefore the answer is that his wife was from that Shevet, or maybe from a Kohen or Levi who lived in that Shevet's territory, and therefore now he comes to have property in Shevet Ephraim. V'omer. Then Rabbi Shmuel says, I have another pasuk that also bears out this point that a husband yaushens from his wife. V'omer, a pasuk says in Divrei Hayomim, usguv hoiledes yor. The psukim I'm mentioning over there among the descendants of Yehuda, it mentions a man named Sguv. Then it says Sguv fathered yor. Vayhi loy estrim b'shalosh orim be'eretz ha-gilad. And he, meaning we have to understand that the he refers to yor, had 23 cities in the land of Gilad. Now, Gilad is the territory of Chatzi Shevet Menashe. How it comes that a man from Yehuda would have territory in the area of Chatzi Shevet Menashe is another question. The psukim before that described that Sguv had married a, that Sguv had married a daughter, or had married, or maybe the way the psukim phrase it is like she was a pelegish of his or whatever, the daughter of Mocher ben Menashe. So Yer was kind of like, was almost like an adopted member of that Shevet. Anyway, again, you can ask, says Rabbi Shmuel, now how does Yor come to have territory that didn't belong to Sguv? And since the Rashbam points out, since the Pasuk says that so if the territory originally belonged to Sguv, then the Pasuk, when it says that Sguv was born to his father and his mother, the daughter of Machir ben Menashe, then at that point it would mention the cities. Instead, it only mentions them after it says that Yair was born, implying that they belong to Yair. Also, the Pasuk continues to say they were called Chaveis Yair, and that eventually Goyish nations, Geshur and Anram, captured these cities from them, and they'd been called Chaveis Yair. So all that implies that this is territory that belonged to Yair. So where does Yair have it if his father Sguv didn't have it? Malamet Shenasa Yair Isha. So again, that teaches us that Yair married a woman, Umesa, and she died, V'yosha, and he yoshin these cities from her. Tosfos actually asks, later on in the perek, we're going to discuss the original territory in Eretz Yisrael when it was given out to the Shvatim. Did it go? Did they divide? Did they look at who came into Eretz Yisrael, or did they look at who left Mitzrayim? And to decide accordingly, and we're going to have the different opinions, and we're going to have how they did it. So now, if we say that it was Levoy Haaretz, that we look at who entered Eretz Yisrael, then you'd have a very simple answer. Sguv was one of the Yotzei Mitzrayim. Yair was born in the desert, and therefore he could have territory that didn't belong to Sguv. Why doesn't Rabbi Shmuel accept that possibility? So the Yad Ramah answer is that that the Gemara knew that Yair was born only after they came into Eretz Yisrael. There is Bechlal, an interesting question. Here we have a Yair related to Menashe, who had territory in the land of Menashe that was called Chavis Yair. You also have such a thing mentioned in the Torah, in Parshas Matos, and also mentioned briefly in Parshas Devarim again. Is it the same Yair? Mefoshim on Divrei Yomim disagree about that, whether it's the same Yair or not. Some of them say that it's not the same one, this is a later one, and it was kind of a play on words, because the original one from the Torah called his cities Chavis Yair, therefore people also called the one from this later Yair, they also called his villages Chavis Yair. In addition, there's another Yair who's mentioned as one of the Shoftim, in the middle of Sefer Shoftim, and he may be yet another one, or he may be identical with one or the other of these. Based on what the Yad Ramah is saying, that might work better with the Mefoshim, who say that they are in fact different ones. So you have the one who's mentioned in the Torah, who obviously was already alive and had these cities at the time that Moshe is speaking in Parshas Devarim. And then you'd have this later Yair, who, as the Yad Ramah is saying, was born already after they entered Eretz Yisrael, and he also has these cities, and therefore, since he didn't inherit them from his father Sguv, we have to say that he must have inherited them from his wife. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Mai va'omer." Now, why does Rabbi Shmuel need so many psukim to establish this point that a husband yaushins from his wife? So the Gemara says like this: "V'chitema." Because you might start saying like this. You brought the first pasuk that says that a daughter who yarshins nachla has to marry a man from her father's shevet. Well, you could say, maybe the pasuk is only concerned about, maybe the pasuk is not concerned about her husband yaushining her. Maybe, in fact, her husband doesn't yaushin her, but rather we're concerned about the children. Her children are going to be from the same shevet as her father, and therefore we're concerned that that shouldn't happen. So how do you know from that pasuk that her husband yarshins her? Avabal lo yoris, you could argue that maybe the husband doesn't yarshin from her, that the husband doesn't yarshin from her altogether, and it would be in a way more logical to say that, because after all, her son is close to her. Her son is her own child, as opposed to her husband is not biologically related to her. So you could argue, therefore, that maybe the pasuk is implying that he doesn't yarshin her, but rather, eventually, she and her husband are going to have children, and then the problem is what happens when the children yarshin her and the nachla goes to a different shevet. So that wouldn't be a proof. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel brings the second pasuk, Toshma, V'lo Sisev Nachla, L'vnei Yisrael, Mimata El Mata. So now you have another pasuk that says that Nachla should not pass from one shevet to another. So even if you're going to say the first pasuk is talking about her son yashining her, why would you need a second pasuk? Therefore, it must be talking about her husband yashining her. But the Gemara continues, you still might argue, V'chitema, you might answer back, so what? You have two psukim that mean the same thing, that we don't want her children from a different shevet yarshining her and the nachla passing to a different shevet. All it means is lava ola balava esser. All it means is that if that were to happen, if she were to marry in a different shevet and then her children from that different shevet yarshin her, then it would mean she was over not only on the mitzvahs esser, but also on a lav. Because in other words, the first pasuk, when the first pasuk that we quoted, that v'chobas yereshes nachla, that any daughter who yarshins la'echad memishmachas mati avia tia le'isha, that would be an esse. Yes, you can deduce from it that it means she shouldn't marry outside her shevet, but that would only be what's called a lav abba miklal esse. You have an esse, and from it you can deduce a lav. That kind of thing is not chayav malchus. So maybe you would say that the second pasuk, v'lo sisiv nachla, actually creates an actual loisese that you shouldn't have a possibility of nachla going to a different shevet through her children, and therefore that you actually have a loisese involved, and there would be malchus involved. And again, the point is that we would still rather not have to say, unless absolutely necessary, that her husband yashins her, because after all, again, her husband is not biologically related to her. So maybe it seems more logical to say that the psukim are talking about her children yashining her. So that wouldn't be enough of a proof. So Toshma, therefore we have the third pasuk, Loisisiv Nachla, Mimata Lamata Acher, where the pasuk again says that Nachla should not pass from one shevet to another, and already now you would have to say on the face of it that the pasuk is now telling us, aside from the issue of Sibas HaBen, of Nachla passing to a different shevet through the children, in addition, there's also the problem of Sibas HaBaal, that her husband would yarshin her, and the Nachla would go to a different shevet that way. V'chi tema, that still might not be enough, says Rabbi Shmuel, which is why he continues bringing psukim. Lava ola b'shnei lavin v'eser. Maybe you would say that it means that if she does that, she's over on two lavim and an eser. So maybe it's still all talking about sivas haben and nothing to do with the husband yashining. Now, Tosfos wonders, I mean, in general, the Gemara doesn't like to do that. We don't like to say that extra psukim are just giving us more lavin. We would rather say that another thing in the pasuk is telling us another concept. The fact is that again, given that it's a big chiddush to say that the husband should yarshin her, maybe we'd have no choice but to say that. So even with all the three psukim that we quoted from Parshas Maaseh, maybe we don't have enough of a solid proof that a husband yarshins his wife. Toshma, that is why Rabbi Shmuel then brings the next pasuk, Ve'alozer, and Aaron Mest, we're going with the pasuk about Alozer passing away and being buried in Pinchas's territory. Where that shows much more strongly, therefore, again, given that we said that Alozer on the face of it didn't have that territory, so that would show that Pinchas yarshin it from his wife. But v'chi tema, you might answer back, how does that prove anything? Alozer hu denosiv itza, maybe it means that it originally was from, that it was, maybe it means that Alozer married a woman who owned this property, and she passed away while Alozer was alive, Umesa, and then she passed away while Alozer was alive, the Yosef Pinchas, and not that Alozer, her husband, married her, but rather that her son Pinchas married her, rather that her son Pinchas yarshin from her. So in other words, the point would be, in that case, then the chiddush would be, that Rashbam explains, the chiddush of that pasuk would be the very fact that the son yarshins from his mother. Because after all, when we were discussing it on yesterday's daf, on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, we were discussing that We found a pasuk that indicates that a woman yaushens from her mother. We said, as far as a son yaushening from his mother, we needed to use a kavachomer to do that, and that kavachomer was a bit of a weak one because we said on the face of it, because of daya, all that would say is a son and daughter yaushen equally, and we had to resort to because an implication from a pasuk otherwise, and we had the opinion of Reb Chaim and Akatsev, and we went through all of that. So now maybe you would need this pasuk to tell us to confirm for us that in fact a son yaushens from his mother, but maybe it has nothing to do with Pinchas's wife. So therefore, Toshma, therefore, Rabbi Shmuel brings the last pasuk, Uskuv Holodus Yor v'Gomer, the one about Skuv and Yor and Yor's cities in the Gilad, where there. So there we have more reason to say that it was that Yor inherited from his wife. Well, you could say also v'chitema hosam nami hachihu. You could say the same thing, that maybe it means it was Sguv's wife passed away while he was alive, and Yor, her son, yaushen her. And the answer is, in Cain, Tre Kroi Lomeli, you wouldn't need two psukim to tell us the same thing. So at least one of them must be telling us that it was a Yerusha from a wife to her husband, either Pinchas's wife to him or Yor's wife to him. And therefore that would be our proof that in fact that a husband yaushens from his wife. By the way, I mean, we usually say, of course, we don't learn halacha from Nevi'im and Ksuvim, but here it would be more a matter of that it clarifies for us that the psukim in Parshas Maaseh, which are in the Torah, are talking about a husband, are talking about hasaba sabal, about the nachla going from one shevet to another through the husband, rather than being concerned about the children. Okay. Well, the Gemara says, Omaleta Popol Abaya. Okay, so you have, in short, Rabbi Shmuel has brought a combination of five psukim. So we have a combination of five psukim from which we can learn that in fact a husband yaushens his wife. But Amalei Rapapa Abaya, Rapapa asks Abaya, in the case of the last two, where it's only a Sipur Dvarim, the first three psukim are from the Torah and they're telling us the din. But the last two psukim about Elazar and Pinchas and about Sguv and Yor are just a Sipur Dvarim. They're a story that the Torah is telling, that the Pasuk is telling us. So, Mimai, how do you know that those psukim are actually telling us that a husband yaushens his wife? Maybe in fact a husband does not yaushin from his wife. Ukroi b'siva saden k'deshaninan, and the three psukim that we brought from Parshas Maaseh are all concerned with that the children would yaushin from her, and therefore the nachla would go to a different shevet. What about the two psukim from Yeshua and from Divrei Yamim? V'yor dezovan mizvan. You could say that Yor didn't own these properties permanently. He bought them. And Pinchas Nami, Dizovan Mizban, and with Pinchas also, you could say that he bought the property and he buried Elazar, his father, over there. So the point would be, in other words, maybe the pasuk just wants to tell us about how rich Yoyer was and that you see that he was able to buy so much land in the Gilad. So in other words, the Rashbam teaches out further. So you could say, in other words, the pasuk just wants to tell us how rich and successful Yor was, as we often find in Nevi'im that the psukim want to highlight for us how a particular person was very rich and powerful. So even if you want to say that the psukim are talking about Yerusha, then still it could be talking about still you could say that the pasuk just wants to tell us how rich they were. At the most, you could learn from it sibas haben about the concept that a son yaushens from his mother. But maybe bechlal the psukim are not even talking about Yerusha, and they're not telling us anything that we can learn a din from, and it's just sipur dvarim ba'alma. And with Pinchas as well, continues the Rashbam. Maybe we're saying that even with Pinchas, where we wanted to say that we learn from it that he yaushens, maybe it means that nothing of the sort. It just means the pasuk wants to inform us that Pinchas had land in that Pinchas had a nice piece of land in Eretz Yisrael. Sabai answers back. No, at least with Pinchas, Pinchas dezoven mizban lematis amrit. When it comes to Pinchas, where it says that he where it says that he buried a Lazar in his father's in his own property, you can't say that he bought the land and therefore it would be his. Because what in that case, the field would return in Yovel, as we know. Any property, any real estate that's bought in Eretz Yisrael goes back to its original owner in Yovel. And the result would be that the tzaddik Elazar would be buried in a place that's not his, and it would be a gnai for him to be buried in such a place where eventually it goes out of the family and he still remains buried there. And we're not going to say, of course, that they're going to move him from there. I mean, there is, in principle, in theory, in halacha, you would be allowed to, you might be allowed to move him in such a case in order to keep him in a property in the that's in the family. But to begin with, we wouldn't assume that they would arrange that in the first place, like that. So fine. I mean, you could say, obviously, whoever sold it would agree that a Lazar should be buried in his land, etc. But nevertheless, it would still be a gnai. It wouldn't be proper that he should buried there. That he should be buried there in the first place. So that shows that the land must have actually belonged full out to Pinchas. And again, since the Pasuk calls it Givas Pinchas B'noi, the point is also that how are we calling it Givas Pinchas B'noi, as though like he owns it the moment that Elazar passed away. But Pashtus, Elazar had other children as well, and some of them, other sons as well, and some of them would have Yashin his property. So how could we be sure at the moment that he passes away that we can call it Pinchas' hill? So it must be that Pinchas Yashin it from his wife. The question is Ela Ema de Nafla le Misdei Haramim. Fine, but you could still argue that maybe he got it from a Sdei Cherem. Now, there are two ways in which a Kohen could get a field which is Cherem. You could have where a person declares that a field is Cherem, which is a type of Hekdesh. And in fact, there are two types of cherem. There's cherem lashem, which means basically that it goes to hekdesh, and then there's cherem koyanim, which is that the person says that it goes to the koyanim, and then the din is you can't be poided or anything. You have to give it to a koyan. So you could say therefore that maybe it was a sdei cherem. Another possibility would be where a person sold a field and didn't buy it back from Hekdesh before Yovel, and then the din is that it goes to the Kohanim who are from the Mishmar that's on duty at the time when Yom Kippur of Yovel comes. So the Papa is asking, therefore, still, so how do we know that Pinchas owns this land by virtue of having inherited it from his wife? Maybe he got it as a Sdei Cherem. So you have the two possibilities, how it could be a Sdei Cherem. So one point is, Mephoshim point out, that it can't necessarily have been the second kind, which is after Yovel, because in Seder Olam, when it teaches about Jewish history over there, that Ramban points out that in Seder Olam, it mentions that Elazar passed away not long after Yoshua. Now, Yoshua led the Jewish people for 28 years, and then he passed away, and was saying Elazar passed away not long after that. Now, they only started counting the Shemitah and Yovel cycles after they finished conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael, which took 14 years, which means when Yeshua passed away, they were only 14 years into the first Yovel cycle, and Elazar passed away not long after that, and the first Yovel wouldn't be for another 30-odd years. So therefore, we can't say that it was the kind of field that was sold in Yovel and then became a Sdei Cherem as a result of that. So we would have to say, therefore, that it's the first kind of cherem where somebody said that this field is going to be cherem koyanim, and therefore that Pinchas could have it that way. So the Papa says, you don't really have a solid proof in the case of Pinchas that he actually yarshin it from his wife. It's possible also that he got it as a sdei cherem. Either way, the point is, it belongs to Pinchas. It doesn't belong to Elazar. We could still say, isn't it bekever? Isn't it that he's buried bekever she'ena shaloi? So a straightforward answer, of course, is if it belongs to his son, then it's not, even though it didn't belong to him, then it's not a gnai that he should be buried there. But the point is, so fine, from the psukim with Sguvan Yor, you have a more solid proof, maybe, because again, why would the pasuk have to tell us this whole business about Yor owning land that Sguv didn't? And Yon Yor and Sguv are not koinim, so you can't talk about Sdei Acherim or whatever. So that's a more solid proof. But Rapapa is pointing out that the proof from Pinchas is not really so strong, because Pinchas, being a koin, could conceivably have gotten this field some other way, and it would still be legitimately his for all time, his and his family's for all time.
Number one. And number two, says that what applies to Kohanim applies to Israel.
No, well, there's no reason to say otherwise. I mean, when it comes to the dinim of Yerusha, there's no reason to say that there's a difference between Kohanim and Yisrael. Where we find where the Torah draws distinction between a Kohen and a Yisrael, then fine, but otherwise we can't make up distinctions of our own. So now comes something that Abaya says.
Well, the Kohanim have no Yerusha and Eretz Yisrael, have they?
Well, they have the 48 cities. Yeah, so fine, but nevertheless, those cities, within those cities, they have basically the same dinim as Yisraelim do in the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Matter of fact, actually, they have even a stronger position, because as we'll learn, Bez Hashem, in a few years from now, in Gemara Erchin, for example, we know that there are cases where Yisrael sells a house in Bate Orechoma, in a walled city, and he has a year to buy it back, and if not, then that's it, he loses it forever. Whereas by Kohanim and Leviim in their Ore Mikvot, that doesn't apply. So you see, therefore, that Kohanim and Leviim have a stronger position than regular Yisraelim.
Yes, but that's exactly the point. So what applies to Kohanim and Levim does not apply to Israel.
Yeah, but there the Pasuk says so explicitly. Other than that, we don't have a reason to say, for example, that Pinchas might yarshin from his wife by virtue of being a Kohen, but that Israel shouldn't. We never find any reason to make any such distinction. In any case, your papa was saying that the point is that you're fine. We can't say that Pinchas bought the property, but at least with him, we could say that he received it as a Sdei Cherem. But again, fine, we would still have with Yoyer, where he clearly didn't, and therefore that would be at least a little more of a solid proof. But now comes something that Abaya says. The question is, we have two ways of understanding it between Rashbam and Tosfos, whether Abaya is now going to continue the conversation, or whether now we're starting a new topic. So the Rashbam brings, there is a girsa that he had in front of him that says Omer le Abaya, that Abaya says to Rapapa, meaning, in other words, that Abaya is continuing the conversation and saying, you Rapapa are saying that from that we don't really have a solid proof to say that a husband yarshins from his wife. And then in the course of the discussion, we were mentioning that we're concerned about Sibas Habal, we're concerned about that the Nachla might pass from Shevet to Shevet through the husband, or are we just concerned about through the son? So Rashbam mentions that he had a girsa in front of him that says Omer le Abaya, that Abaya is saying to Rapapa, and continuing on that topic. The Rashbam himself does not like that girsa, and he says it doesn't really fit with the flow of the Gemara. So rather, the Rashbam prefers a girsa which comes from a Ben Gershom, which is Omer Abaya, which is Abaya is saying a new point. So fine, then at this point, we've established that at least when it comes to Pinchas, we don't have a solid proof, and therefore, so the proof that the proof that a husband yarshins from his wife ultimately would have to depend on the story of Sguv and Yoyer. And now Abaya is pointing out a side point, not really a side point, but Abaya is going to point out that even if she marries a woman from her own father's shevet, as we're going to talk about, you still have a problem of asavas nachla. You still have a problem of nachla going from one shevet to another, as Abaya is going to point out. So that's according to the Rashbam, and we'll learn the Gemara according to him. And then afterwards, Be'ez Hashem, we'll talk about Tosfos has a different girsa. Tosfos prefers the original girsa that Rashbam had in front of him, that in fact Abaye is continuing the conversation. So the girsa that we have in front of us, which is how the Rashbam prefers and how he learns from how Rabbeinu Gershom's girsa is Omer Abaya. So Abaya points out there seems to be an issue anyway over here. Leaving aside what proofs we have from the Psukim about the husband Yarshining or not, we have a different issue anyway, Abaya points out. Soif, after all, even if this woman marries a person from her shape, marries a man from her father's shevet, don't you have a problem that the nachla is going to be transferred from the shevet of her mother to the shevet of her father? So in other words, we can consider this woman. So we're talking about over here. You have, as we learned before on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, we could be talking about, for example, a woman whose mother is from Shevet Reuven and her father is from Shevet Shimon. So fine. So she belongs to Shevet Shimon. Now, if she goes and marries a man from Shevet, so fine. So the Torah is telling her that she needs to marry a man from Shevet Shimon in order that the Nachla will stay within Shevet Shimon. But don't you have the issue anyway? She inherited as well from she inherited from her mother from Shevet Reuven as well. So ultimately, you still have Nachla going from one Shevet to another. It's still being transferred from Shevet Reuven to Shevet Shimon. So the question would be then: is the Torah concerned? So is the Torah concerned about that as well? We have to take that into consideration as well. So the Gemara asks back on Abaya, Umimai, what makes you say that the Torah is makbid on that as well? The Dilma Shiny Hosam Shekvar Husba. Maybe you could say in that case, you know what? When she yarshins from her mother, it's already been taken from one shevet and given to another. When her daughter yarshins her, and again, her daughter is already from Shevet Shimon because her father is from Shevet Shimon, so then it's already been transferred to another Shevet. At that point, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe at that point, it doesn't matter. Let her marry a man from Shevet or never mind. Even before she gets married, already the Nachla has been already taken away from Reuven and given to Shimon. So we have in front of us Omar Le, and again that would fit with Tosfos's Girsa, but the Rashbam instead says the word is supposed to be the Dilma. So it's not an Omar Le that he answers him. The Gemara answers back the Dilma, maybe not. Maybe Shekvar Husba Le Amrinan. Maybe we shouldn't say that. We have to be concerned. We can't say, yeah, but it's already been transferred because the daughter who inherits is already from a different Shevet. Here, let's give the protagonists' names over here. So we have, for example, Reuven from Shevet Reuven married Dina from Shevet Shimon, let's say. So now they have a daughter Yecheved who's also from Shevet Shimon because she's from Shevet Reuven because her father Reuven is from Shevet Reuven. Now that alone already when she yarshins from her parents, and we already established before she's definitely going to yarshin if she has no brothers, at least she's definitely going to yarshin from both her parents, from her father and her mother. So already the Nachla from Dina from Shevet Shimon has already been transferred to Shevet Reuven. So maybe the Torah. So on the one hand, we can say Shekvar Hospa. Well, already it's too late. It's already been transferred to Shevet Reuven, and that's that. But maybe not. Maybe Shekvar Hospa Le'aminan. Maybe we should be makbid about that. The fact is, it's not. She belongs, after all, to two different shvatim. So at least her mother's nachla remains sort of within her shevet. On the other hand, if you're going to say that maybe the Pasuk is still concerned about if she now goes and marries a man from Shevet Yehuda, then it's going to completely leave her mother's Shevet, and maybe the Torah is saying that even in that case we're concerned about it. So it's not just that it already went from Shevet Reuven to Shevet Shimon, if that already went from Shevet Shimon to Reuven, let's say, So maybe we should say that we still can't say that the Torah would say that in that case we don't care if it gets removed, if it gets removed from there altogether. At least we should try to have that it stays as much as possible, as close as possible to the original shape. So that would so in other words, so again, so Abaya is not continuing the conversation from before, according to this, according to the Rashbam's explanation. He's rather saying that on the face of it, we can ask the question that when the Torah is mentioning this case where a woman yarshins, that and when again we established before that it can mean that she's yarshining from two shvatim, what good does it do if we tell her to marry a man from her father's shevet? Still, the fact is the nachla from her mother is going to go to a different shevet. So therefore, and if you're going to say that shekvar husba, but maybe not the duma shekvar husba layaminin, maybe we are concerned already, even though it's already passed to a different shevet, we don't want it to further pass around among other shvatim. So then the Gemara continues. So now says Rab Yema to Rab Ashi, no, because you can't you have to say that you have to say Shekvar Huspa. E Amit Bishlema Shekvar Huspa. If you're gonna tell me that when already the Nachla has been passed from one Shevet to another, namely in our case where her parents are from Shevet Reuven and Shimon respectively, and you're gonna say at that point the Torah doesn't care who she marries because already the Nachla of her mother has already gone to a different Shevet anyway. Then we can say that the Pasuk is telling us that there are two concerns over here. The Torah wants her to marry within her father's shevet, and that way we're covering all our bases. Whether the concern would be Sibas Aben, that her sons who are from her husband's shevet will yarshin her, or that the husband himself will yarshin her. Either way, what we're saying is that at least that way, the Nachla that she inherited from if we say that her father is from Shevet Reuven, if you're going to tell me that Shekvar Huspa Layaminan, that or if we're going to say Shekvar Huspa, if we're going to say that as far as the Nachla from that she inherited from her mother from Shevet Shimon, look, there's nothing we can do about it at this point. Her father is from Shevet Reuven and she already belongs to Shevet Reuven, so there's nothing more we can do about that, but at least we can prevent that what she inherited from her father from Reuven should stay within Reuven, and therefore the Pasuk is telling us that she should marry a man from Shevet Reuven, same Shevet as her father, and that way at least the Nachla doesn't continue passing from Shevet to Shevet. That way, at least you have that the Nachla that she inherited from her father remains within that Shevet. And that way, whether her husband yarshins her or whether her son yarshins her, either way, at least it's not passing to another Shevet. Eli Amit Loyamrinin Shekvar Huspa. But if you're going to tell me that, that Shekvar Huspa is not a factor, and you're going to tell me, in other words, that we are always concerned. We never want Nachla to go from one shevet to another. Well, then, what good does it do? Even if she marries a man from her father's shevet, my haba, how does it help? Still, the fact is, she inherited from her mother, who's from Shevet Shimon, and that Nachla is leaving Shimon and passing to Reuven. So by this point, it's already a done deal. If you're going to, and what are you going to do? The fact is, her father is from Shevet Reuven. So, but since the Torah is telling us that she has to marry within her father's Shevet, that shows we have to say that we have to say Shekvar Huspa. We have to say whatever happened with her mother's, whatever happened in our scenario with Dina's inheritance from Shevet Shimon. Look, there's nothing we can do about it at this point. So all the Torah is concerned is at least the fact that she inherited from Reuven at least should stay within Reuven. But if you're going to tell me that you're also concerned about Shekvar Huspa, then what are you supposed to do about the fact that her mother is from Shevet Shimon and that Nachla is gone from Shevet Shimon now? So wouldn't that mean that therefore that we have to say Shekvar Huspa whenever you have whatever was already lost from Shimon when her mother from Shimon married a man from Shevet Reuven? There's nothing more we can do about it. All we can do is just make sure at this point, once this mitzvah is given, that she should marry within Shevet Reuven and it'll stay within Shevet Reuven's territory. So the Gemara answer is no, not necessarily. You could still say that we are concerned shekvar husva, because we could say deman sevinim lo lagavra davui meshiv to davu over ima meshiv to davu meshiv to deima. Maybe the Torah would be concerned in that case that we want that her husband also should be from two different shvatim. That his father is from one shevet, and her mother and his mother is from another shevet. So that way, in other words, so what happens? Her husband himself comes from those two shvatim, Reuven and Shimon. So therefore, in other words, there is still so he himself belongs to Shevet Reuven, because of course it goes according to the father. So that way, what she inherited from her father, what Yecheved over here inherited from her father Reuven, still remains within Shevet Reuven, and what she inherited from her mother, from Dina, from Shevet Shimon, fine. At least it's not leaving the Shevet completely, because after all, her husband is Yecheved's husband is now at least partially from Shevet Shimon as well, and therefore maybe that's what the Torah. Maybe that's what the Torah wants. So you could still say that the Torah wants as much as possible. We shouldn't have Nachla going from one Shevet to another. And when you have, to begin with, that a woman who Yarshin's property from two Shvatim is from a mix like that of two Shvatim, then yeah, maybe the Torah wants that her husband should also be from those same two Shvatim. But the question is, if you're going to learn that, in that case, the Pasuk should say so. The Pasuk is making a whole big deal over there about that she has to marry a man from her shevet, from her father's shevet. So now if you're going to tell me that you have to consider the mother's shevet as well, then the Pasuk should specify that she has to marry a man who is from her father's shevet and her mother's shevet. And then the answer is no, because iksiv hoch, you know, because if the pasuk had phrased it like that, hava amina afilu ipcha, then you would think it would be fine also if it was the other way around. What if her husband's mother is from, what if her husband's father is from Shimon and mother is from Reuven, and you would think that's good enough because at least you have Reuven and Shimon involved? No, kamash malon, therefore the pasuk would say that the main thing is he has to belong to Shevet Reuven, namely that his father was from Shevet Reuven. But nevertheless, again, given that, we want to avoid hasavas nachla. We want to avoid nachla going from one shevet to another as much as possible. And therefore, logically, we would understand ourselves that it means that that his mother has to be from her mother's shevet as well. In order that because this girl herself, because Yecheved in our scenario herself inherited property from both Shevet Reuven and Shevet Shimon, therefore she has to now marry a man. So primarily we want that the most important thing is that her husband should be from Shevet Reuven. But in addition, we also would want that the Torah doesn't specify it in so many words in order not to give misunderstanding. But nevertheless, we would have to understand logically that maybe his mother has to be from Shevet Shimon as well. Basically the question would boil down to, when the pasuk says mimati aviha, that her husband has to be from her father's shevet, does it mean that it must be that all we care about is her husband is from her father's shevet, and we don't care about what her mother is from? Because we're at this point already shekvar husba, we already say her mother's nachla is lost to Shevet Shimon, and therefore we don't care what happens to it any further. Or nevertheless, are we still concerned about that at least it shouldn't leave the Shevet as much as possible? So that would be the two sides of the question, and therefore, so you could say maybe the Torah is machben on that as well. So again, according to the Rashbam, all of this is a separate question than what we were dealing with before. We were dealing with before how we know that a husband yarshins from his wife. So fine, that discussion was over, and now we're talking about just a side point kind of within that. By the way, when you have a woman who comes from two different shvatim and inherited from two different shvatim, how do we avoid that the nachlap doesn't continue passing from one shevet to another? That was all according to the Rashbam. Now again, Tosfos. And Tosfos in turn has several questions on the Rashbam. One of them being that Rav Papa has asked a question on the Braisa. Here the Braisa has tried to bring a proof from Pinchas and Elazar that a husband yarshins his wife. And Rav Papa says, how do you know that Pinchas inherited it from his wife? Maybe he got it as a Sedei Cherem. And instead of answering, Abaye is starting with a whole new thing and asking a Kasha. And what is he doing with Rav Papa's question? It was a good question after all. So and the fact is, other than Rabbeinu Gershom, all the other manuscripts of the Gemara that they had in those times said Omar Leh, and therefore it seems that Abaya is actually continuing the conversation with Rav Papa. So therefore, Tosfos learns that here we're saying that Rav Papa had said that you can't really prove from the story of Pinchas, meaning, in other words, maybe according to Rav Papa, we would say that maybe the Torah is not concerned about Asava Sabal. Maybe the Torah is not concerned about that the woman is going to yarshin from her father, and then she's going to marry a man from a different shevet, and her husband will yarshin her. So in other words, maybe Rav Papa is saying that we don't have a proof, after all, that a husband yarshins his wife, and the fact that the pasuk says by Pinchas that Elazar was buried in his property just means that it was property that he got as Sdei Cherem. So according to the Papa, maybe, in other words, the pasuk is implying that there's no hasava sabal in the first place. Maybe the husband doesn't yarshin from his wife in the first place, and only her sons yarshin from her, and therefore the pasuk is only concerned about that. So then the question would be, the fact is she inherited from two Shvatim. So then what, even if she marries from the Shevet of her father, what good does it do? Even if you're going to say, Rav Papa, that her husband doesn't yarshin her, the fact is her son yarshins her, and her son is only from a different Shevet. So Abaya says, then you would have like this. The Gemara continues. So Abaya is saying, maybe it's one thing when Shekvar Huspa, when already it's already been that it already went from one Shevet to another, namely that she herself belongs to a different Shevet than her mother, and already at that point she's yarshined it from her mother, and of necessity it's lost to that Shevet. Then therefore you could say that so if you say that the husband yarshins her, then the Torah is telling us that fine, let her marry a man from within her own shevet. And at least, again, you know, as far as Shekvar Huspa, there's nothing we can do about that. What she yarshin from her mother, one way or the other, is going to be lost to that shevet. But according to the Papa, according to the Papa, that the husband doesn't yarshin, then the question is, what does it matter what shevet she marries into? Either way, her son is from a completely different shevet than her mother. And then Rav Papa answers, according to that, we do have the girsa omale that Rav Papa answers him, shekvar huspa layamrinan. As a matter of fact, we don't say. So actually, rather, in Tosfos' Girtze, it's Rav Papa saying to Abaya, Dumo shiny hosam shekvar huspa. Sure, you have that she inherited from two Shvatim, but nevertheless, maybe the Pasuk is still, look, what she inherited from her mother is gone. There's nothing we can do about it anyway. The Pasuk is only caring about Siba Saben. So then at least she should marry a man from her father's Shevet. So at least her son is from the same Shevet as her father. And Abaya answers back, no, Omale. So in that Girsa, we do have Omale, that Abaya answers, no, Shekvar Huspa Le'amrinan. There's no reason to assume that the Torah is ignoring the Nachla of the mother altogether. So we should try to see what we could do with that. And therefore, then the Gemara ends up answering that what we could do is, in that case, you could say that we fix up the situation by having her marry a man whose father is from her father's shevet and mother is from her mother's shevet, and that way it's not completely passing out of the nachla of her shevet, but that could still allow us to say that the husband does in fact yarshin from his wife. So in other words, so ultimately we would have a proof from that the husband does yarshin his wife, but kind of a roundabout proof because as much as possible, the Torah wants us to prevent Nachla from going from one Shevet to another. And at least when it comes to Siba Sabal, we have a way around that. The Pasuk is stressing that she has to marry a man from her father's Shevet. And we could say the Torah is also implying that in that case, her husband's mother has to be from the same Shevet as her own mother. And that way, at least when it comes to Siba Sabal, then we avoid that issue. Okay. So the Gemara is now gonna bring a couple of brises, which we'll start tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that discuss further this point when the Psukim in Parshas Maaseh are talking about Nachla going from one shevet to another. Are we primarily concerned about the husband yarshining from his wife, or are we primarily concerned about the son yarshining from his mother? That's going to be the subject of the next piece of Gemara.